We were blessed to have the opportunity to study this wonderful book to some extent. Today is the last class, and let us begin with the prayers. Om Asatu Ma Sadgamaya Tamasu Ma Jyotirgamaya Mrityur Ma Amritam Gamaya Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Lead us from the unreal to the real, from darkness to light, from death to immortality. Om peace, peace, peace. The Prophet had been describing the various secrets and many tormenting problems in our life. The Prophet stayed for a long time with these people in this island of Orphelius. And now he is departing, giving his parting advice. The bond of love has been very intricately, very deeply woven, maybe felt, maybe unfelt. It has fathomed the depths of hearts of everyone. And then, now, through that very strong, very powerful link, the wisdom is getting transmitted through the words. The words is a medium just to express the underlying love. That is how Jnaneshwar, the great saint, describes the process of a true teacher in spirituality imparting the wisdom. It is, he says, sneha pudha pazare akshari akshare maguti chalati, that sneha, the love, is pouring out in front and then dragged into those, that stream of love are these words. These letters are just following this powerful stream of love. And that is that love that was imparting these teachings really. The words were just shapes. It is like eating a piece of cake. The shape is there, but what is going inside is the cake, the substance. And that is where the essence of this is. So, we saw many different teachings in this. And now, there are so many things, you know, to learn in this. But since we are coming close to this end of this summer session, today being the last class, I will also come to the last chapter. It is a beautiful chapter, longer than all other chapters here, and therefore it will take longer time. Do not get impatient and start looking at your watches. This will be a long class. It is, and I request you all kind souls to be patient. And patience, this patience, I can guarantee you, is going to be a very richly rewarding patience. Patience as such is always rewarding, but this patience is a very richly rewarding patience. It's a sermon which cannot be really broken in two classes. Even had we had one more class, still it wouldn't do justice to break this chapter into two, because this is something that is continuous. Let us start reading. And now it was evening. The discussion started at dawn, when he saw in the distance that the ship is approaching. At the horizon he could see the ship coming to take him back. And now it is evening. The ship has been waiting for him at the bank for quite some time. He was talking to people, answering their questions, and the wisdom was just pouring like the rains from the clouds. It is so. And now it was evening, and Almitra the seeress said, "Blessed be this day and this place and your spirit that has spoken." And he answered, he is now saying goodbye, about to leave. And then Almitra says, "Well, it is well you have spoken, and your spirit that has spoken, it is." And he answered, "Was it I who spoke? Was I not also a listener?" This is where you can see a teacher really imparts the wisdom, that this oneness is felt with the student. It is, again, I am tempted to bring in that great sage Jnaneshwar's beautiful analogy, that it is as if he says to his disciple, a student, a very brilliant man, Changdev his name, and he tells Changdev, our conversation was like this, that two mirrors are kept in front of each other. Just try to feel this, you know, these that two exactly alike mirrors kept in front of each other. And now you have to stretch your imagination. Up to this it was very clear, two mirrors exactly alike placed in front of each other. And now imagine those mirrors have eyes. What will the mirrors see? So he says to his disciple, O Changdev, his name was Changdev. Changdev, that was the nature of our seeing each other. Our meeting was like the two mirrors with eyes kept in front of each other. Who is seeing whom? It is I am seen as other and many others. It is that is how the conversation, the exchange of thought is happening without really being an exchange. I was the speaker. Was I not the listener? Look at this, you know. the picture. Now, the one who is talking is also listening. It is the mirrors, same one figure reflected in so many different images. There are no two people. It is the reflection of one. Bhagavatam, the great book of devotion, describes that little Sri Krishna's sport. How was it? That it is, he is like a child playing with so many of his reflections in mirrors. It is, as it says like this, that suppose a child, there is a mirror, and you might have seen and experienced also, if you give a mirror to a baby, then gets confused, who is this, and wants to play with that baby, that other one in the mirror, and who is this fellow, starts talking to that, starts pulling its nose, and so forth. And then still further, if the mirror breaks into pieces, now the child gets confused further. So many now, in each of those multiple pieces of mirrors, the same child is now reflected. I am seen as many. This is actually the case, friends. It is the one self that is in all these mirrors that are called bodies. We are not really many. We are not many. It is the one self. This idea, friends, is not easy to digest. But herein, in digestion of this, I am not saying indigestion. Please remember, it is in and digestion of this idea is the storehouse of true bliss and the success of life. I am all that is. So, it is through this the true spiritual wisdom can be imparted. It is always noticed that the teacher and student, if they have better rapport, then imparting of knowledge is also better. It is, if the teacher and student are not getting connected, then it becomes difficult. That the transmission of knowledge is not very simple then, when there is that rapport. Then, to the extent that rapport gets established, the transmission of knowledge becomes easier and easier. And what can be a better rapport than this seeing of oneness? That is how he is saying. And then he describes that how he has been saying here. Now no particular question is being asked to him. He is not being told, tell us about love, or tell us about children, tell us about giving, tell us about eating, all those things we saw. Now there is nothing being requested of him. Now he is saying on his own, and he says, I am going to skip for the sake of, you know, time, a few passages. And please, as I have skipped earlier also some chapters in the middle, and now many chapters have been skipped, so I will be speaking a few paragraphs. And it is, he says that, brief were my days amongst you, and briefer still the words I have spoken. But should my voice fade in your ears and my love vanish in your memory, then I will come again. This is the coming again and again of the prophet, the God incarnating as man again and again. A very nicely illustrated concept in Vedanta philosophy, that it is again and again, as per the need, the divine manifest as human being to teach humanity. That famous verse in Bhagavad Gita that is quoted there, it began like this. That chapter 4 chapter begins, that Arjuna is telling Krishna that all this knowledge that I have been giving you, remember, this is not the first time that I am giving this knowledge. I had given this knowledge long, long ago to the sun. In the beginning of this cycle of creation, I had given it to the sun god. And then from that sun god, it was received by this person and that person. And then that chain continued for some time. But because human beings, in their frailty and their desire for running after multiplicity, lost the meaning of my words. They twisted what I told them, and therefore again I have to come to give this knowledge. I am giving you this knowledge, O Arjuna, because bhakto sime sakha cheti rahasyam hi etad uttamam. This greatest secret of life, I am opening it to you because you are a devotee and my dear friend. So that dearness, that love, that is making this knowledge come out. So, and Arjuna got bewildered because he is seeing a man like him, same age. They had been friends since their childhood. And now how he says that he had given the knowledge to the sun god? What are you talking, Arjuna? What are you talking, Krishna? Says Arjuna. I don't get it. Are you in delirium? What are you talking? We were born together almost in the same year. And how do you say that you gave this knowledge ages ago to the sun? Krishna laughs and says, Bahuni me vyatitane janmani tavacharjuna tanyaham vedasarvani natvam vethaparantap. We both, O Arjuna, had spent infinitely many births. I remember them all. You do not remember. It is, we consider ourselves with as these limited bodies and think therefore that when this body was born, then I was born, and then that is how I am now 10-year-old or 20-year-old or 90-year-old, whatever. It is, I am that. And then we say, well, that is what I remember. You say that I was born many times. Why don't I remember that? A very easy rebuttal to that is, do you remember your very early babyhood? And no, you do not remember what you did say when you were 3 months old. Does it mean if memory is the proof of your existence, you don't remember what you did when you were 3 months old? Then Does it mean that you were never 3 months old? Ridiculous. It is, and yet this argument has been advanced by so-called learned people that if I was earlier also before this birth, then I should have remembered it. Well, not necessarily. Do you remember everything that happened in your life even yesterday? Forget when you were a baby. The existence does not depend on our remembering it. We may not remember and yet we exist. People who get into dementia, they do not remember what happened 5 minutes ago. It is, I told you that story, a patient went to the physician and said that, "Doctor, I keep on forgetting everything." And then the doctor asked, "Since when is this happening?" And the patient asked, "What since when?" So it is, we forget even a minute ago what we said, and still we try to base our existence on this fleeting phenomena of memory. So Lord said, "O Arjuna, you of fickle memory, you do not remember. Tanyaham ved sarvani." But because I am not caught in this nervous system web, which is not a very powerful means of knowledge, I know them all, that it is, and that is where this verse then comes. Remember, I assume body every time whenever people forget the message, and out of love I bring that message to them again and again. It appears that I am born like you guys. Not exactly, because I remember all that I was. It is wonderful to see. You can read, you know, the Jataka tales of Buddha. There he remembers all the past lives, what he did then and so forth. So, and he says, therefore, that this is how again and again we take different bodies. Then he tells, how was my existence? Yes, I knew your joys and your pain, and even in your sleep, your dreams were my dreams. It is God, is this prophet, the God incarnated. We all live in him. It is just as he gives actually that analogy to here, that it is all my thoughts, as it were, they live in me. See that big receptacle in which all thoughts also of all people are living together. So he says that, therefore, I knew your joy and your pain, and in your sleep, your dreams were my dreams. Now think of Sri Ramakrishna. If you want to see the proof, if you want to see the living experience of these words, look at the great life led by Sri Ramakrishna and Holy Mother, how each breath was reflected in their breath, how each pulsation of consciousness was also the consciousness in them. It was a wonderful phenomena, a man, but not a man. It is, that is how he says here, that, and oftentimes I was amongst you, a lake among the mountains. I was like a lake in the mountain, in which now what happens? You can see in the picture, the mountain is reflected in the lake. One beauty is here that it is, while it is reflected in the lake doesn't get actually affected by the mountain. It is seen there. So the lake, he says, I mirrored the summits in you and the bending slopes and even the passing of flocks of your thoughts and your desires. And to my silence came the laughter of your children in streams and the longing of your youths in rivers. The poetry is simply unspeakably sublime, friends. It is all that is happening in the mountain sea, it is all getting reflected. But without scratching the lake at all, the God has everything that we think, but no scratch occurs there. Because it is just a passing show, a reflection. Everything that is happening in this mirror too. It is, when we see this, we can feel that our mind is also a lake. In Vedanta, you will find this analogy used. Even in other religions, that our mind is lake. So, in that lake of mind, everything gets reflected. And when if we think of that, then our mind will not get ruffled, disturbed. Just as the lake, it will reflect. Even if there is an explosion on the hill, one of those mountains, the lake will show it. But the disturbance will not come to the lake as such. So, but sweeter still than laughter and greater than longing came to me. It was the boundless in you. This is a great thought. The boundless in us, the infinite lying in us, the vastness that is our true nature, the teachers that come to us like prophet, their job is to make us aware of our vastness and transcend our littleness. Like Swami Vivekananda saying, that is put in the chapel, that it is to invoke the divinity of each soul, that is my job. It is, each soul is potentially divine. Religion is the manifestation of divinity already in us. We are vast, friends. We are vast, boundless. And we do not know that. Once we know, we think of us as these puny bodies, puny egos, puny sense of I and mine, and getting caught in them, well, get mired in the problems around. We generate the problems because of our puny egos, and then spend the life in solving those. If the supply of problems seems to be rather less, we generate new problems. Expert at that, you know, it is. We cannot keep ourselves calm. So always are looking for new problems to solve. It is. But when we understand our vastness, all these things dissolve in us. In the vast man, everything different happens. And what is this vast man? We will see. He in whose chant all your singing is but a soundless throbbing. It is in the vast man that you are vast, and in beholding him that I behold you and loved you. It is the love that this prophet, a saint, loves everybody. But although that is a great love, no human love can match it at all, howsoever close two human beings may feel. It is all very temporary and also based on desires, based on likes and dislikes, and therefore the human love is just putting conditions on each other. It is called love, but it is more, the proper term will be emotional blackmailing. So it is, that is what one passes this love for. But this love is very different. It is the love that makes us free, makes us aware of our true vastness, and therefore he says, in beholding that vast man, that I beheld you and loved you. They always look at the divine. I remember here the wonderful incident, rather the wonderful chapter, I would say, in the life of Sri Ramakrishna. He used to love all devotees, all people around, but he had very special love for this young man, Narendranath, a college student, then later he became Swami Vivekananda. Now this Narendra, there is a full chapter about it in Sri Ramakrishna's biography, that Sri Ramakrishna and his divine play. It is a beautiful work explaining the life of Sri Ramakrishna, both on the physical as well as the spiritual plane, and how the two are connected closely in him. So there, because it was so close, Sri Ramakrishna used to keep on crying for seeing Narendranath, that I did not see him for a long time. He would send messages after messages. They were not the days of texting or calling on cell phones, no. But he used to send emissaries, people, oh, please tell him, when you go, please tell him that I am waiting to see him. I long, my longing for seeing Narendra. He described his, that how that longing was. Unbelievable. That he started crying, weeping and wailing, about 45 year old man. Those days that was considered pretty old age. He said, what will you think of me, an old man crying for not meeting a young man like that, who is nobody to me. Yet it is, my heart is being squeezed, wrenched like a wet towel. That is how he described. He is crying and crying, and the devotees, they consoled him, no, we will tell him, we will tell him to come, and so forth. So Narendranath once therefore told him, what is this? Why you are loving me like this? And will that not create an attachment and bondage for you, making you again take rebirth? And then Sri Ramakrishna like a child thought, wow, is it like that? And then goes to the temple there and then comes out laughing. Hey, Divine Mother told me that you love Narendra only because you see the divine in him. The moment you will not be able to see that, you will not even look at his face. So, what is that Sri Ramakrishna is holding in Narendranath? That vast man, that which includes everyone, that which is our true nature, that is being loved. So, he continues, the book continues, and in beholding him that I beheld you and loved you, for what distances can love reach that are not in that vast sphere? What visions, what expectations, and what presumptions can outsoar that flight? Like a giant oak tree covered with apple blossoms is the vast man in you. His might binds you to the earth, his fragrance lifts you into the space, and in his durability you are deathless. That is what that vast man is, the existence in us. That vast man is what that is what binds us here. That is what keeps us. See, just imagine, friends, what gives us identity? All particles, they are just continuously shifting. Our body is not our identity at all. Just see, did you look like this when you were 3 months old? No. The body is not our identity at all. Where lies our identity? Where lies our existence? Just as it is not in our robes, it is not in our body either. It is in something much deeper that we are having our identity. It is, and that is this vast man that does not change. You must, let us think of what is identity. It is a very beautiful study, that what really is gives us our identity. The principle is interesting. That which does not change in the midst of changes, that is what gives us our identity. Like you show your ID, that say if you are traveling by air and they want to see your ID, then they look at you. You might be in completely different attire, but than what is in the picture, still they identify you as the right person. Why? Because there is, clothes are changing after all. You keep one clothing, another clothing, still they let you go. Your ID, in your ID you may have, a shaven face, but a man then can have a big beard. And then still they will allow you to go in, because they mentally can remove that beard and see the face. It is, many criminals try to hoodwink, they change their face and try to go. The appearance is changed, but then they look at the eyes, which are not subject to change so easily. And so it is, that which does not change is essentially what our ID is. And what is it that does not change? You may say DNA. Even somebody, suppose, does the eye surgery and gets put some other eyes. Still there is DNA that relatively doesn't change in the physical sense. but it is still not the same. The DNA is only related to the body. It is not changing only on that plane, but otherwise it changes. It does not identify us anymore when we are at the thought level. It is therefore, what is that that is goes for our true identity? And this is the vast man that never goes away. That is our true nature, that divinity, that vastness, where we are infinite, where our little shapes and names are dissolved, gone. That is our true identity. Like the Upanishads say, that, well, think of the many pots made of clay. The pots, they come and go, break, again remade, but their identity as clay remains. That is the true identity. So that is, think of that. That is that vast, infinite one. Beyond infinite, not in space and time, friends. Infinite, beyond space and time. That which cannot be measured. There is no tools of measurement there. It is, its vastness is not because you do not have a measuring rod big enough. It is vast because the measuring principle itself doesn't become applicable there. It is a very important idea that the process of measurement itself has no validity there. That is, it is vast in that sense. So then his fragrance lifts you to this peace. That fragrance is the symbol for happiness here. That all happiness is from the touch of that vast being in us. That vastness brings us happiness. All other pleasures in this world are so fleeting. They cannot really bring happiness to us. It is whatever little happiness even there that we feel is because of this touch of oneness. That example I like to give always, that it is in destroying that separateness the happiness arises. In separateness there is no happiness. Even the little pleasure that I get from eating a cookie is not that cookie there and I here. When that cookie brings me happiness, when I and cookie become one, it is only then that cookie is destroyed, and then I am happy. It is therefore the happiness always is in that transcending the names and forms and feeling the vast in us. So this is, and in his durability, you are deathless. We all are otherwise subject to death. We may try to prolong our life by many medical, these innovations coming up and so forth. But one day we have to die. Even if you get 10 years extra, they also quickly come and go. That's it. It is not going to be satisfactory at all. It just vanishes. The whole life vanishes in a twinkle of eye. Here I can see myself even now as a little boy playing in the dust in my little village back in India. And now, in a just little while ago that happened, and now I am a gray-haired fellow close to death. It is just life comes and vanishes, comes and goes like that. So doesn't matter it is whether it is 5 years or 500 years. It is our immortality lies in this vastness. There, and there is no idea of birth or death. I am eternity. I am the truth. So that is there you go beyond the appearances, and that is that vastness is your life. It is you have been told that even like a chain you are as weak as your weakest link. This is but half the truth. You are also as strong as your strongest link. To measure you by your smallest deed is to reckon the power of ocean by the frailty of its foam. Look at this beautiful, you know, analogy. It is very powerful analogy. Can you judge the power of ocean by just looking at its frail foam? The foam is frail, but the ocean behind it is very powerful. So, therefore, we should try to see the deep strength in a person. The superficial appearances very weak and fragile, but in the depth that strength is there. We should therefore see the strong point. Never, Swami Vivekananda says, never judge a person by looking at the frailties. Judge that person by the strength. Look at that divine nature of a person. And don't look at the mistakes that the person has committed. But look at that ocean, that vast man who is ever pure, ever perfect. Look at that. That is why such persons, they never condemn anybody. No possibility of condemning, because you saw a weakness, but that weakness is temporary. The strength, that vastness is the permanent nature of that being. So one should look at that. It is, he says, I only speak to you in words of that which you yourselves know in thought. That is the nature of ideal friends. That what we really are seeking in life, that is just made vivid by the words of such teachers. We all seek in life, if we ponder, try to feel our deepest thoughts, we can see this easily. That what are we looking for? I suggest you to see to read that chapter from Swami Vivekananda's book Jnana Yoga. The second chapter in that book is the real nature of man. That real nature, that we all are seeking that really. Do we not seek freedom? We all seek freedom. Nobody likes bondages. We all like freedom, even a little baby. One family was just, they came in the car and then were getting their things inside the Vedanta Society. They were going to stay here for a couple of days. And then amongst them was a very little child. about not even 2 year old, and then that child, the parents thought, well, will not be able to go by himself and may go here and there. So we're trying to hold. That child broke free, actually yelled at his dad, "Oh, I can do, I will go myself." It is the freedom. Even a baby wants freedom, doesn't like to be bound. It is, nobody likes bondage. But as physical beings, we are all bound. These teachers are just telling us that you are free when you see yourself as the vast being, not limited by these puny bodies. And that is where we all want to, you know, to be happy. Where is the happiness? Happiness, all other achievements, you know, we may think that will make me happy. No, friends, there is no such possibility at all in that. You can get to what you wanted to get, but the sense that you were having that will make me happy, well, that doesn't happen. One may think I will become president of America. One may become, yeah. Does that make the person happy? You know that it is. So, it is like that. It is anything you may achieve in life that doesn't bring happiness at all. Only this touch of this vastness, touch of the vast man in us, that can bring us happiness. So, this prophet only is telling us what were our thoughts. He was giving words to what were our deep thoughts. We wanted to be happy. We wanted to be free. We wanted to know everything. This is the way to do it. And he continues, and what is the word knowledge but a shadow of wordless knowledge? Now, friends, I will not even try to talk about this. They are all, after all, words. But one can meditate and see how true these things are. That words can only express a very little, and that too in a distorted manner. That is why Jesus says, "Letter killeth." It is when you try to tell, well, you limit it, you distort it, the meaning gets lost. But just see the thought knowledge is purer. If I can just transmit the thought without words, that is so, you know, it goes more seamlessly. Gets to a person that, even in my childhood, I used to be very stubborn. And then my mother would tell again, "See, won't you do this? You have to do this." And, "No, I won't do it. No, it is..." And then she may bring a stick to beat me. "Will you do it?" "No, I won't do it." Well, then she would be feeling helpless. And then would start crying. And that seeing her tears, that would make me do it. Now look at that, friends. What was that power? It is like that. That it is, the words cannot really tell much. It is something that is beyond the words. That is important. And then he continues, wise men have come to give you of their wisdom. I came to take off your wisdom. That is all the wisdom here means the worldly wisdom. How to make money, how to run for a public office, how to have a successful business, how to, you know, maintain your family relationships and so forth. Wise people would come and tell you about that. Many other things. But this is ignorance, a variety of ignorance being passed as knowledge. And so I have come to take it off. And behold, I have found that which is greater than wisdom. It is a flame spirit in you, ever gathering more of itself, while you, heedless of its expansion, bewail the withering of your days. It is life in quest of life in bodies that fear the grave. It is life in quest of life that fears the grave. Life here, it means of course the life in body. And we fear the grave. Well, my days are come. Oh, I see the writing on the wall. It is, yeah, the signs are already there. I start shivering with the thought of death. It is that, what is that play of Shakespeare? I forget that. The person is now afraid of the coming death. It has been very ruthless, was always taking pride in his great prowess. Now the death is approaching, can see that. It is Macbeth. Macbeth, I think. Yeah. So, it is that now death is approaching and he's afraid of that. And there is a very nice soliloquy that feeling is so scary. It is not easy for us to feel that. When we get it, we know it. It is that incident that one doctor described it to me, to look for, you know, one of our very senior Swamis was having this heart problem. And we were told to just watch that he may get a heart attack. He will not be able to even say that. At night, he may suddenly get it. Even during the day, he will suddenly get it. And then he will not have the strength to say anything. And then I asked that, well, how do we know it then if he doesn't say? That is why the doctor said, I told you that you keep on looking at his face. It will be writ on the face, that fear of death will be writ on the face. You can see that it is fear of death that will be on the face. And then as soon as you see that sign, you have to do this, even before calling me, because it is matter of just minutes. If that moment is taken care of, that's it. He can be revived. But if that moment, it is just a matter of seconds. So, and then we used to therefore take turns. And I saw when it was my turn, you know, at night. the face changed. That is, and thus you know, it is they sticking to this life, this imbecile life really. It is imbecile, just physical. That is what gives this sense of fear of death and fear of grave. But he says there are no graves here. These mountains and plains are a cradle and a stepping stone. There is really no grave here. It is, one has to remember this. And then he says that less than a promise have I given, and yet more generous have you been to me. He says, you have been also equally generous to me. You gave me a lot. And then he mentions here this one important idea. You are not enclosed in your bodies. Let us try to feel this. You are not enclosed in your body. It is, he is remembering only the kindness that the people have showered on him, because he is feeling the love. He never felt that anybody ever hated him. People might have felt that, we did not do the right thing with him. But in his thoughts, it is not like that. Verily, the kindness and gazes upon itself in a mirror turns to stone, and a good deed that calls itself by tender names becomes the parent of a curse, parent to a curse. When we think of the good deed done to somebody, then that good deed becomes nothing. It turns itself. It is, the kindness turns into stone, and good deed turns into parent to a curse. But when we do not know or think that we have done something good, then that is real goodness. It is in this belief and in this knowledge that I say, you are not enclosed within your bodies, not confined to houses or fields. You are not enclosed. Just let us see, we are vast. We are not enclosed in the bodies. We go, move about, everywhere. We are bigger than the universe. So many universes come and go in us. We are bigger than that. That which is you dwells above the mountain and rose with the wind. It is not a thing that crawls into the sun for warmth or digs holes into darkness for safety. That is the body. That is not what we are. It is, you are not enclosed within your bodies. He says that all these things that I am telling, that they are vague words. These words are after all vague. But he says, if these be vague words, then seek not to clear them. Vague and nebulous is the beginning of all things, but not their end. And I fain would you have... I fain would have you remember me as a beginning. Life and all that lives is conceived in the mist and not in the crystal. And who knows but a crystal is the mist in decay? This would I have you remember in remembering me. He is telling that this is what is I have come to you means what have come to you. What is this prophet coming to you? What will you take from him? It is, this would I have you remember in remembering me, that which seems most feeble and bewildered in you is the strongest and most determined. Is it not your breath that has erected and hardened the structure of your bones? An obvious fact. The breath that seems to be feeble, not very strong, it is just air, but that makes the strength of the bones. And is it not a dream which none of you remember having dreamt, that builds your city and fashioned all that is there it is? So, this is what you have to remember, that what I am. Could you but see the tides of that breath, you could cease to see all else. And if you could hear the whispering of the dream, you would hear no other sound. But you do not see, nor do you hear, and it is well. The veil that clouds your eyes shall be lifted by the hands that wove it, and the clay that fills your ears shall be pierced by those fingers that kneaded it. And you shall see, and you shall hear. We have to see, we have to hear. That is what Jesus says. Let those who have eyes, let them see. Isn't it an enigmatic statement? What does Jesus mean? Are we not seeing? Well, we are worse than blinds. Blinds don't see. We see that doesn't exist. We consider that which is a passing show as real. We see that all errors, all wrong things, that is not really the sight. The God that is present everywhere, we don't see. We are like those who see the waves but cannot see the ocean. The waves come and go. We only perceive the changes. Our whole nervous system is designed not to see the changeless, but only the changes. It is, our sight is designed to see that. Our ears are designed to hear that. It is, the changeless is not perceived by us. But that is the reality. The ocean is the reality on which this changing dance of waves is happening. That is really the seeing the ocean. So, it says, let you see. And when he said all these words, that after saying these things, he looked about him and he saw the pilot of his ship standing by the helm and gazing now at the full sails and now at the distance. Means the time to board has come. You can't wait any longer. And he said, patient, over-patient is the captain of my ship has been. The wind blows and restless are the sails. Even the rudder begs direction. Yet quietly my captain awaits my silence. He is talking, so let him be silent. And these, my mariners, who have heard the choir of their greater sea, they too have heard me patiently. Now they shall wait no longer. I am ready. and then now he is giving a goodbye. Fare you well, people of Orphalese. This day has ended. It is closing upon us even as the water lily upon its own tomorrow. What was given us, have we shall keep. And if it suffices not, then again must we come together and together stretch our hands. Forget not that I shall come back to you a little while, and my longing shall gather dust and foam for another body a little while. A moment of rest upon the wind, and another woman shall bear me. So, saying this, a little while, and this is now the prophet has concluded the journey like this. And if our hands should meet in another dream, we shall build another tower in the sky. A little while, a moment of rest upon the wind. The reincarnation, that body, that God will reincarnate again. That prophet will come to teach again. Because we didn't get it, we forgot it. As the generations passed, that message got distorted, twisted, became ununderstandable. So, well, another woman will then bear me. It is that form, that spirit. This is the just the poetry. But look at that, you know, what is the poetry? The poetry is that which tries to put in words which cannot actually be presented in words. That is the attempt of poetry. Poetry is not like science, give measurements, exact this, that. Somebody looking at a beautiful crystal. Well, if that is a scientific, so-called scientific mind, then we'll start telling what is the frequency of the waves, that is, the lights are off, what is its shape, and what this particular crystal can be called, and so many things. A poet will describe something very different that is not obvious to others. That is why in Hindi there is a saying, Jo na dekhe Ravi, so dekhe Kavi. Means that which the sun cannot see, the ordinary eyes cannot see, the poet sees that. So, the highest poetry is that which expresses that which the senses cannot decipher, senses cannot see. That is perceived by the poet. The poet is identical really in its highest sense with sage. The sages are the best poets because they see the deepest truths and try to present them to us, bring them to us, and therefore their words have to be poetry. So that is what he says, and thus he departs. And a cry came from the people as from a single heart, and it rose into the dusk and was carried out over the sea like a great trumpeting. Only Almitra, the seeress, the one, this the sage-like lady who made him speak, she stood there. And when all people were dispersed, she still stood alone upon the sea wall, remembering in her heart his saying, a little while, a moment of rest upon the wind, and another woman shall bear me. So friends, here we conclude our discussion. It is a timeless thing. You may think that why, if we had another 10 classes, we could have read the whole book. No, friends. Even if we have 100 classes, still we wouldn't have been able to read much, let me tell you. We could just read the words. But every single sentence, everything hides such a great wealth of feeling, of the spiritual tidings. Well, it is the job that each of us have to do in our deepest meditations. And let that meditation manifest in our life. Let that meditation make our life tuned to the vast man. Let us become free from this terrible bondage to this physical clingings. Thus, these words will start ringing more and more true to us as we go on this journey. So friends, thank you very much for helping me to read this book. It is always a great blessing that comes to me in form of you all. You are all images of that vast man, and thus when I see you getting connected to that vastness, these words also come out, this understanding also in glimpses start coming up. So I do not have words really to thank you for coming here for these classes. And this concludes most of our summer programs. Coming Saturday, we have a devotional music concert in the morning from 9 to 11 in the morning by a great, wonderful singer, Ujjal Banerjee. You are requested to come for that. And then we will begin our regular session after the summer break. It will begin with a retreat to be given by Pravrajika Satchit Prana from Sarada Math in India, a very highly respected scholarly lady has been touring US for quite some many years, and this year again she has been invited by the devotees. It is for the first time that she will be giving a talk in Providence. She had come to Providence a couple of times, or may at least once when I was here, and at that time I requested her to give a talk at Marshfield, but she, because those days our summer sessions used to be in Marshfield, and she said no, she doesn't want to. But now she has agreed to give a retreat on September 9th, Saturday, September 9th, and one has to register for that. So, and then on Sunday, we have two very important programs. One is a workshop on Sufi yoga, 8 limbs of Sufi yoga, given by Nathaniel Miles, a Hasidic and Sufi teacher. A funny combination, isn't it? Hasidic teacher and Sufi teacher. So he will be giving this workshop, and he is talking neither of Hasidicism or Sufism directly, he is talking about yoga. Eight limbs, like Patanjali's eight limbs of yoga, he is talking about this discipline. So that will be from 9 a.m. to noon on September 10th. That also one needs to register for. And then Sunday at 5 p.m., from 5 p.m. to 7:30, we will have our Universal Brotherhood Day, an annual wonderful interfaith event that heralds the beginning of all our programs, daily prayers, meditations and so forth for the public. So let us conclude with the closing prayers. Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Tat Sat Shri Ramakrishna Arpanamastu.